Welcome to the Artistic Foodies, the show that explores life through the lens of art and food. I'm Abbas Muhammad.
And I'm Irfan Raidan.
And today we're talking to none other than the Ike of the famous sandwich chain, Ike Sandwiches. On the first day of operation in 2007, Ike Shahade did not sell a single sandwich in his small hole-in-the-wall Ike's Place in San Francisco's Castro District. Now, 15 years later, the man behind the goateed cartoon logo has built over a 90-unit empire, an expansive menu catering to every diet preference. Important secrets to his success? Delectable Dutch crunch bread lathered in Ike's exclusive dirty sauce. He has spoken hundreds of times and has been seen on TV by audiences in the millions. But his dream, Ike's dream, is to teach billions, feed billions, and create billions.
Season 3 of the Artistic Foodies will be an exploration of the food industry. Join us as we talk to entrepreneurs, restaurateurs, and other notable personalities within the field.
So both of my parents were born in Jerusalem. My father ended up coming to the United States in 1968. He came directly to San Francisco, which is where I end up being born. So I was born in San Francisco, born and raised, and I stayed in San Francisco even all the way through till now. That's where the first Ike's was, and that's where I was born and raised. I went away to college, went to UC Davis.
Yeah, go Aggies.
Yeah, that was basically the only time I lived outside of the Bay Area. Because if you're from the Bay Area, you specifically know that like Sacramento and Davis and that is not the Bay Area. No offense to Sacramento and Davis and stuff like that, but it's definitely not the Bay Area.
Tell us a little bit about, I know you have a very, so some people haven't heard your story about, you know, you had a hard time. You were homeless for a while and then you took a lot of effort to get obviously where you are now, but give us a little bit of history, if you can, of some of the struggles that you had when you were first starting out in the business.
Oh man. Well, I've got a bunch of different like businesses that I've had and struggles there. And actually, apparently, let's see, in 2015, I wrote something and it showed up on my feed on Facebook in my memories where I was talking about, somebody specifically asked me about the beginning of Ike's. And so I just reposted it yesterday and it got a whole bunch of hits again. I guess it's always going to be applicable to people when it comes to wanting to be successful. So I don't know where you want to start, because I had a business before Ike's and that ended up not working out, which then ended up leading me to having, like, I had to sell my house. I had to sell my car. I had a 1975 Corvette Stingray, which I had to sell. So I ended up not like losing my house or losing my car, but I had to sell them because business wasn't working out for me. And then I did end up not having a place to stay because I sold my house. And I did end up having to like stay in people's cars or on people's couches. And a long time ago, like in 2004, I lived in the back of my business. So I had a business from basically 2001 to 2004 on 16th and Mission is a supermarket. Likely, if people follow me, they already know this story. But what ends up is the business ends up going out of business, even though I went all in. Like I sold my house to support the business and I sold my car to support the business because I felt like that was a better investment for me. I love the business and it was a supermarket on 16th and Mission. It still exists there. It's just not my business anymore. And I ended up having to live in the back of the store once PG&E came in and turned off the power. And I just closed the business and I lived in the back of the store for 3 or 4 months. But before I got like officially evicted by the landlord, and obviously they should have evicted me. I wasn't paying rent. No power, lived there with my cat. Luckily it was a grocery store, so I had like cereal on the shelves to eat, like out of the box. We had no power, so there was no like milk and no like perishable items, but I was eating canned beans and corned beef and hash out of the can. And then I got evicted from there. And from there, I just bounced around to, like, I lived in the back of other people's businesses. I lived on couches. I stayed in the back of my friend's van. I lived in cars. And that was going on for about 9 months before I ended up getting back on my feet. And that was all in 2004. So, like, from April 2004 till the end of 2004.
So everybody, I mean, you know, anytime you have a bunch of guys hanging out, like, everybody has million-dollar ideas all the time. There's a reason, though, why everyone is not a millionaire. Execution, dedication, commitment, these are things that are definitely required. You're talking about you sold your car for the business. You sold this for the business. You sold that for the business. These are not the traits of an ordinary average person. It takes a special kind of person to build an empire like you have. But I'm very curious, for the very early stages, what was that like for you getting the concept off of the ground? Who were your earliest champions and mentors? What kind of a headspace was that? Like, you know, take us into your mind in the very beginning stages of Ike's.
100%. Like, I've probably had better ideas than Ike's throughout my life that I didn't act upon. And everybody that's listening has had a great idea that they thought was a great idea. And maybe even someone else somewhere else took that idea and turned it into a million or 100 million or $1 billion idea. So I believe the universe or God whispers ideas into our ears all the time. And it's like, oh, what about this? And we act upon, or I act upon, other people act upon the ones that they actually not only think are great ideas, but also resonate with you. Like, oh, wow, I actually love this, or I'm committed to this. Because as we all know in business, it's literally nothing is an overnight success. It doesn't matter what it is, whether it was, one of the most successful things of all time, like Facebook or Instagram or even Google. None of those were even overnight successes. They had to do their thing and do their idea and believe in it. And then now they're, trillion-dollar ideas. Same thing with Ike's, or same thing with whatever you're thinking about. So when God whispers in your ear, the universe is telling you this is the idea, and you don't act upon it, that is specifically an indicator to you that, hey, that's not your idea. That's not something for you. Yeah, so for me, like, okay, because it was a blessing for me that I had my previous business and it didn't work out, and mainly because it gave me the lessons of, well, why did I stay in business for so long previously? Because there were times where I was successful in my store, and then it went from being really successful to I'm not making any money, to making like maybe $100 a day to $20 a day, like in my pocket, 20 bucks for 10 to 20 hours of work. And the reason why I kept showing up for work back then is because I really loved the customer aspect. I really loved merchandising. Like, one of my favorite things to do and one of the last tasks I gave up at Ike's was I love stocking the shelves. I love making the chip rack look good, and I love the refrigerator, like the sodas being all aligned and put all the root beers together and all the colas together and all the fruit flavors together. I love doing that. So for me, the market was great. I love making the drink shelves look amazing, and the milk shelf and the candy shelf. So for me, it was, oh, okay, I did it, even though I was making like 20 bucks a day for 20 hours, because I love the job. Flash forward to like years later. Sorry, that business closes in 2004, and I don't open Ike's till 2007. In that 3-year period when I was working for other people, but wanting to get back into business for myself, I looked at my wins from previous, like, why did I stay at the Mission Plaza Market, which was the name of my market, for so long for so little money? And even though I had like no spiritual awareness or no personal development at all, I was cognizant of enough to go, well, I did this work because I liked it. So if I'm going to move into business for myself, I might as well find something that I love to do, because I know it's not going to be any money. And I'm not going to quit. if I like it. If it's something that I'm starting this app and I only care about an exit strategy. And this is where like I see it go wrong for so many people these days. So many people reach out to me right now. Like I'm talking about 100 people a month. Ike, help me with my business. Or what about my app? Especially when I was on campus at Stanford, or when I'm on campus at Chico, or when I'm on campus at Santa Rosa Junior College, people come up to me like, Ike, I have this idea and blah, blah, blah. And my exit is this and this and this. And I'm like, do you like it? Because if you don't, I don't freaking care how great of an idea it is. You're not going to stick it through when you're not making money. So it's not going to be a good idea for you. Me knowing that about my own self from my own experience, I just made a list. What do I love to do? And if there's one thing that somebody's going to take from this conversation that we have, is make a list of what you love to do. And I'm going to add in the caveat, you need to already be doing it right now. So not like, oh, I love to travel, but you never travel. Don't put you love to travel on the list, because the truth of the matter is you don't love to travel, because there are broke-ass people out there that spend all their money on traveling, and they work and then they travel. Those people love to travel. If you dream about traveling and you never travel, then you don't love to travel. So for me, it's what do I love to do that I'm also doing right now? And I made a list. It was like snuggling my baby animals and snuggling cats and stuff like that. So I was doing that. So I wrote that on the list. Yeah. So the other things I love to do is feeding people. Like when I was broke as hell, I would still come over to your house, look through, and got really excited to look through your cabinets, look through your fridge, be like, okay, we barely have any food, but we have mustard and we have garlic powder and we have rice and noodles, whatever. And then I would make a dish from that. So I knew I loved to experiment in the kitchen. I knew that I loved to not only just make the food, but then like feed people, like other people. I know that I would cook less for myself than say if there was a couple of us. And then I also love to eat. So I put those on the list. I put other things on the list. Like I like going to amusement parks. I like watching mystery movies and trying to figure it out. So whatever it is that you love to do and that you're already doing right now, make a list and be cognizant of what those things are. And then from that list, and I had 37 things on that list that I put on there. I put like eating, going on dates, watching TV. Mm-hmm. Like it doesn't matter what it is. Snuggling animals was on my list. What are the things that you can do from those things that you already are doing, that you love to do? How can you theoretically make money from those? Be a lot of money. Like if I was a pet sitter, I'm sure I wouldn't be a millionaire right now, or maybe I would have because I would have turned into a pet sitting business. But like you can make money hanging out with dogs and cats and parrots and whatever you love. You can make money watching movies by doing a blog post or now these days on TikTok. So if anything, these days right now, you can make money doing anything just as a so-called influencer. So what are those things? And when I put all that together and I saw I love to cook, I love to feed people, and I love to eat, it was almost apparent that, oh, I should get in the restaurant business. Because I know no matter what, that I would feed people for free, which I did in the beginning. Like I made sandwiches and I didn't make any money. I would eat for free. Obviously, I think most people would eat for free. And I would feed people. And I love to cook. I love to create, which is why Ike's menu is 1,000 plus sandwiches. Because I love to create new things. I don't recall the last time I ate a sandwich that was actually on the menu. I usually go to Ike's and make something brand new that Ike's doesn't have. And if it was great, I
love that.
So basically from that list, and that's how I started. And I knew that because of my failures from the past. I knew that because I loved working at the store, even though I was making no money. Like I was going negative because I sold my house and I sold my car, but I still showed up single day. So what is it that you would show up every single day to do no matter what? Like, is it having conversations with your friends, being there for them, your people and your family? Is it, what are those things? Is it working out? What are those things? And then figure out how you can make just slowly but surely a little bit of money from that. Because the weird thing is, because I get this as big pushback, is, but Ike, I don't want to turn my hobby into a career because then I won't love it anymore. If that's true, then that means you don't love your hobby. Because if you're going to do your hobby anyway, like just think about it, just from an actual intellectual standpoint, if you're going to do anything anyway, period, like you're going to go work out anyway, or you're going to go and hang out with your cat anyway, or talk to your friends anyway, or go on a trip anyway, if you're going to do that anyway, you're an idiot if you don't also try to find a way to make money off of that. Like, if you're going to do it for free, why wouldn't you do it for a dollar? Why wouldn't you do it for $5? Why wouldn't you do it for 50 cents? You're telling me you hang out with your cat and somebody's like, here's a dollar for hanging out with your cat. You're going to be like, sorry, I don't want to, because it's going to take away from me hanging out with my cat. No. So I will tell you, if you're afraid that you're going to turn your hobby into a career and then you're going to not like your hobby anymore, then you actually don't like your hobby. Because if you cared about your hobby, you would do it for free, or you would do it for $1 million.
Very powerful message there to all the entrepreneurs. Thank you for sharing that. I had a little follow-up question related to people like Abbas was mentioning, people who helped you out. I know you talk a lot about your mom, and you even named a sandwich after her, Hot Mama Huda. And I know you have mentioned on social media before, but tell us a little bit for our audience, like, how did your mother help you out in your business and your career in life?
So once I decided and looked at my list of things that I love to do and decided, okay, I'm going to open up a cafe, which ended up turning into Ike's, I made a list of what I thought I needed to accomplish to get that done. And luckily these days, and even back then, there was the internet. So I can Google, okay, what do I like making a menu and food cost and things like that. On the list was, okay, well, how am I going to get the funds to open it up? I had a little bit of money, but definitely not enough to what I thought it would take to open up a cafe. And so I pitched the idea to people, and like I was like, this is what I wanted to do. And some people, when I said I wanted to open up a cafe, were like, oh, that's a stupid idea. I mean, especially in I don't want to say in my culture, because I don't want to put them on blast, but like, you know, they're like, no, you need to go to school and you need to be a doctor or a lawyer or whatever, right? Like, or an engineer, I guess, these days, versus you want to open up a restaurant, you're an idiot, right? Especially considering for me, I had a business previously and I went out of business. So they're kind of like, didn't you already do that? And it sucked. So I would pitch it to people and they're like, oh, that's a stupid idea. So what I just did was just, okay, well, I just didn't talk about that idea to those people anymore. If somebody in my family or my friends aren't going to be supportive of it, then they just don't need to hear about it anymore. So as I was going through and telling people, hey, I have this idea and I want to open up this cafe and make breakfast and sandwiches and coffee and stuff like that, my mom was one of the most supportive people. I'm sure in the back of her mind, she was like, oh, you know, well, best of luck to you kind of thing. And maybe it's because she was my mom. She was like, okay, yeah, let's go for it, or let me know how I can help you with it. Versus some of my like closest friends were, well, that's stupid, and you know, best of luck to you kind of thing. And so my mom was actually the one that provided all the rest of the funds that needed to be put together to open up Ike's. And then once Ike's ended up getting open, and I was like, oh, it's just me. And I needed people because we started getting kind of busy. And by kind of busy, I mean like 20 people, but I couldn't run back and forth. My mom would come and start running the register for me in the beginning. And at one point, it was just me. After it was just me working there, it was me and my mom working there, and then me and one of my best friends working there, and my mom. And so she has been there since literally before Ike's opened. And she's the reason why Ike's even started, because she put up basically every penny, almost every single penny, to open, get it open.
So in the very beginning, did you always start off having some halal options in the sandwich? Did that come in later? What inspired having some halal on your menu?
So the halal stuff came from, because my mom only eats halal. And she was going, well, if I'm going to invest in this restaurant or help you with it, I need to be able to eat here too. And so initially we're like, okay, well, let's find halal products that we can use. Now, unfortunately, it wasn't really easy to find halal everything, like bacon and pastrami. Maybe these days it is, but back then it wasn't. And so it was really easy to get find halal chicken. The only thing was I would have to make it every single day and use spices and things like that. So if everybody that eats halal, you also got to thank my mom for that, because if it wasn't for her, I wouldn't have went out and made the effort to find halal products, because it's definitely more expensive than regular chicken. when you're trying to build a business and try to make money, you know, obviously you want the cost to be as low as possible, not artificially higher because it's a niche thing like halal. And luckily now we sell so much halal products that we get halal chicken for just slightly like pennies more than non-halal chicken, the volume we use. But 100%, my mom was like, if I'm going to give you this money, I need to be able to eat at Ike's and not just tuna sandwiches. So we found the halal chicken, and that's also why we have like 200 halal chicken options, is because my mom, like, what do I want to eat this one? Or I want to eat that.
Thank you very much, Mama Huda, for that.
Yeah, thank her. Eat halal, 100%. That's my mom's idea. And also my mom's kind of like, it needs to be that way. Otherwise, I'm not giving you the money. So.
Right, yeah. And is it all of the branches that have the halal chicken option, or is it just some of the branches?
100% of the options. And the thing is so when we got the halal options, when I decided to go halal, for me it was part of the whole inclusiveness of Ike's. Like once my mom said, put it on the map of like of my awareness. I mean, that's why we have gluten-free options and vegan options.
Right, yeah.
Is because I want you to eat a sandwich. I want you to come to Ike's and not go, oh, I can't eat here, or I'm going to get a salad instead or whatever. So for me, it's, oh, of course. Like, either if it's either halal or not halal, not 100% of Ike's is halal, but we have options for that. Like same with the vegan people and vegetarians and gluten-free and dairy-free. Like it's, I want you to eat a sandwich. And that was part of the whole like love and sandwiches part. So for me, my mom was the one who spearheaded the whole halal thing. Like even right now, as we find out about different kinds of dietary things, like keto or whatever. Not that we're gonna, you know, it's a sandwich place, but I'm working on some keto bread. It's all about, hey, I want everybody that whatever you're going through in your life right now to be able to eat. So whether it's halal or vegan or you're dairy free, gluten free, whatever that is, I want to make sure you eat a sandwich at Ike's because that's what we're about, love and sandwiches.
And now a word from our sponsors. Our sponsor for this episode, okay, you're going to love this. This is actually really special. Our sponsor for this episode is none other than Ike's mom, Huda herself. She was kind enough to support this. She supported Ike from every step of the journey. We're so thrilled that she came on to sponsor this episode. Really warms our heart. So if you haven't already, check out Ike Sandwiches. They do have a partial halal menu. Make sure you let them know you want halal only so that there's no cross-contamination. Check out the one in Palo Alto at 401 Lytton Avenue in Palo Alto, California, or you could call them at 650-561-4762. And now, back to the show.
I'm going to ask a kind of a tough question, but a lot of people who, like myself, who eat halal are always wondering when they go into places who have a partial halal menu is there any instruction and process that you give to employees in terms of avoiding cross-contamination with non-halal products such as, you know, like bacon or ham, which is not halal? And then people, it can go back to the vegan people as well. How do you avoid cross-contamination, and how do you go about that in terms of training employees and things like that?
So with everything, if somebody's gluten-free and they say it's gluten-free, but I actually need it not to touch gluten, and I'll start by saying the ham and salami and meatballs, those are all beef and turkey. The only pork that's at Ike's is the bacon, and mainly because we couldn't find really a substitute that for people that want bacon. I mean, I don't know. I don't freaking eat bacon. But for people that want bacon, we couldn't find a substitute that was whatever, acceptable, yeah, as far as taste-wise. So the ham, turkey, or the ham, meatballs, whatever, salami, that's all beef or turkey.
Okay.
As far as cross-contamination goes, when somebody goes, hey, I want this to be gluten-free, or I want this to be vegan, and like I don't want it to – we have a separate like kitchen area for people that want that. I will say that if somebody doesn't say specifically that they want it separate, we automatically assume that people don't care. Me growing up Muslim and being like, I want no pork touching my stuff, like growing up, I know that when I want that, or my dad wants that, or my mom wants that, that they make it specific to the waiter every single time, or the server every single time. So I assume that if you don't say that, then you don't care. And maybe that's too much to put on the customer. But I know if I don't want pork touching my stuff, I tell people not to have pork touch my stuff. So if you don't say, hey, I want my stuff, I'm ordering a halal chicken sandwich, and I want it not to touch anything that's not halal, we will just assume you don't care if it touches it or not. So if you do, well, I will tell everybody, they need to let us know. And we will make it. We have separate kitchen for gluten-free. We have separate kitchen for, we have separate knives for vegetarian, vegan, stuff like that. If they don't want it to touch, like if they have a reason why they don't want, you know, cheese on their stuff or whatever, we have that capability and we will. It might take a little bit longer because we're going to go make it in a separate kitchen and bring somebody else, like pull them off the line and go specifically make your food. But yeah, you'll have to ask. Same if somebody's gluten-free and they're like, it's an allergy and I can't touch it. Like, we assume that just because you ordered gluten-free, that if it's an allergy, you're going to let us know.
Okay, that's fair. That's good to know.
So yeah, let us know. If you don't want your stuff to touch, you let us know. How do I know? Because my dad makes sure. I'm at dinner with him the other day. He told the server like 15 times. I'm like, Dad, I'm pretty sure they know. They don't want any pork on. You don't want any pork on anything. Like, they, you said it. But, you know, like, I mean, I grew up in that environment, so I feel like it's on the customers to let us know.
So when are your plans for the first ever fully halal Ikes? I think we're all been waiting for that for years.
Oh, my gosh. So I'll say the fully halal, we've had so many times where we've attempted to do that. And apparently the universe doesn't want that to happen right now, because we even signed a lease in Fremont, and I think that would have been the perfect place for the first ever all halal Ike. Mm-hmm, and then I was definitely. And then I was going to turn, and then I had an investor that was like, Ike, let's just we were going to turn the Palo Alto Ikes into 100% halal. And then at the end, the investor was like, oh, actually, I don't want to put money behind this. Not that they didn't believe in it, but they just, it was just weird. It was weird to me. I was like, wait, you want me to put up all the money and me do all the halal stuff and then me split the money with you? I was like, what the hell do I need you for? Like, I could just do that myself, right? So it was really weird. And I really thought we were going to turn the Palo Alto Ikes into the first halal Ikes. And I thought we were going to be the Fremont one. So I just say right now, like maybe my mom is really the spearhead behind that, because she would want the like hot link and steak sandwiches and all these that were.
Steak sandwiches.
And I believe straight up that if we had an all halal Ikes, that especially in the Bay Area, that the Bay Area community would blow it up. And I will say, if I ever do it and it doesn't blow up, I'm going to turn it into a non halal Ikes, and everybody will just be on their own fault for it. Though
it'll be the first ever fully non halal.
Exactly. It's like, no, we're having real pork and real ham dogs. I will say that for some reason it just hasn't happened, so I just assume it's not in the plan right now.
So the short answer of that is inshallah. Exactly. We're gonna make it inshallah.
Inshallah, when it happens, it'll be the perfect time. Apparently it was, and maybe it's great it didn't happen, because then COVID happened, right? So then maybe it would have opened and it would have closed, like, not even because of its fault. It would have just closed because the government, or, you know, the way the world was.
Right.
It's probably a good thing it didn't happen. And,
right.
As I said, we've already attempted to do it twice and it hasn't happened yet. So there must be something that's not, you know, it's not ready.
So what is,
you got to do three tries, third time's a charm.
Yeah. What is something that you feel like you would need for that to take off? Are you looking for investors?
Well, I would say, so the first thing that would need to have happen is an ideal location that would be, you know, for that. And whether that be a high, like, you know, Islamic community, like area, or just people that really love vegetarian food, or that, whatever that would look like. And then the next part is because right now it's profitability is at an all-time low as far as percentage of profit. Ike's has, I don't know, like almost 100 restaurants right now. And I swear we're probably making the same amount of money as we did when we had like 60 restaurants. And that's probably not actually accurate. But as far as percentages, our percentages are going down as far profitability as fast as possible, basically. And then also in the Bay Area is like one of the most expensive places to just do business generally. And that's before you even factor in like costs or or what do you call it, governmental things, like you need to get a permit, and then that takes like 7 months to do plus rent. So I'd say if there was, and the reason why we were going to turn Palo Alto into is there was somebody that's like, hey, I'm fully behind this. I want to bring halal, like I want to make it even more mainstream than it already is. And Ike obviously already have the name and people will love it. And let's make it like a destination. I feel like if we did a all halal Ikes, it would become a destination in the Bay Area for all Muslims to come to and anybody else that wanted to eat halal. But that's going to take, like I already know that in Ikes that isn't 100% halal works. So there's also some risk in there because the food cost is way higher. Halal pastrami is almost double than what I'm paying for pastrami right now, mainly because we sell a lot of pastrami. But if we went to a halal pastrami, we don't sell that much halal pastrami, so the price is going to be a lot. So it doesn't mean do people want to pay $18 for a sandwich? And low key, we're in the Bay Area, so that's probably already like people are paying $15 plus for food or for lunch or $20 for a burger at some places. But do people really want to do that at a level that's sustainable to make the business float? Now, I don't know if that'll work. But I do know a $12 pastrami sandwich works because it works like right now at almost 100 locations. So there is a risk factor right now. And where I'm in my life is, especially right now in society and life, is I don't really want to go and take a freaking risk over something that I feel like if other people want to get behind it, then I mean, maybe we do a crowdfunding thing. Be like, all right, if we raise $500,000 and for the halal likes, then I'll open it. So it wouldn't be a risk. But like I feel like I've lived 15 years of Ike's, and every couple of years there's a new thing that comes up that you know, it was whether it was COVID or me starting the business in the beginning or me getting kicked out. It's just like I don't really want to get in a place where I'm going to go invest like a couple hundred thousand dollars and maybe lose it. Like I feel like I've earned the right to not do that, and so it would take not only just support from people saying they would do it, but like actual. Well, put your money behind where your mouth is. And for one every time somebody says about whatever it is they want me to do, people have also clamored for an all vegan Ike's. I'm totally down to do that. And I want to not be the one, like, why should I risk it? If people want to, like, I'll equally risk it with you, but I don't want to be the one that's solely the driver of vegan Ike's and halal Ike's. It's like, I'm 15 years in and I just want to chill and sell sandwiches and love people.
I was just gonna follow up with this is something that I always tell community members that you know, if you have a nice restaurant which is halal and serving your needs, then we have to go out and support it, because there's a lot of places, I'm sure you have this experience as well, there's a favorite restaurant or something that you have and then it goes out of business. And unfortunately, we see that a lot in the halal food industry as well. A lot of places who have great ideas. Is there was like, there used to be this deli back in the day called Top Deck Deli. It was a non-Muslim person who used to have a store, a regular deli, and then he converted it to fully halal because he happened to be close to a mosque. And then he started getting more and more business, and it was successful for a while. But then, unfortunately, he had too much. The landlord decided to increase the rent, and he had a lot of debt already. So he decided to close the business. So you know, that's the thing, is that it's a difficult industry to get into, and when someone puts the effort and time and money and the resources to set up something unique and special, and especially catering to your community, then we have an obligation to go out and support that so then they can sustain and we can enjoy the benefits of that as well.
Yeah, I fully agree with that. In fact, if we look at why Ike's, like we started with just a couple of halal options when I opened. The reason why I keep making more is because people keep ordering them, whether they're eating it because it's halal or not. And same with the vegan menu. We started with two vegan sandwiches, and now we have 70 vegan sandwiches. And that's not because, not that I don't love vegans, but it's because vegans buy the sandwiches, so I'm going to keep making them, right? So same thing. It's the same idea. I had 10 vegetarian sandwiches. Now we have 300. Why? Because vegetarians come out and support. So if you're going to support the halal food, the whatever the food it is, vegetarian, I'm going to keep making them because like with any person that's an artist or any business, you like not only to create your art or do your business or create your service, but to have people actually like use it and enjoy it. Otherwise, you're just singing to nobody, or I'm just feeding sandwiches to nobody like I did on the first day.
So I wanted to ask, so because we're also, you know, entrepreneurs, social entrepreneurs, your fund does the Halal Fest thing. I've got a nonprofit. So very much like everything that you're saying in your story about passion, about the importance of it, it's really, really resonating. You know, I'm definitely picking up what you're putting down. I'd love to get some sort of advice now on maybe a little bit more of a personal side. For entrepreneurs, for successful entrepreneurs, what are some habits, some routines, some things that you would recommend that you found have been absolutely crucial to sustain you as it has on your journey so far?
It'll start with like the first thing that I said earlier when we were talking. What is it that you love to do? I believe that 100% of people know what they want to do with their life. And the only reason why we ever pretend we don't is because we think that we can't make money from it. When I ask people, and we're on a lot of college campuses, or even older people that are already gone with college, I'm like, what would you like to be doing? What's your dream? And they're like, oh, I haven't figured that out yet. That's bull crap. Everybody already knows what they want to be doing. They just haven't found a way to realistically make it happen. Like people know if they want to be an artist or a dancer or a baseball player or, you know, business person, or they have this idea, they just don't think that they can make money from it, and thus it's not realistic. Because anybody that is, like, say they're really into business, or they're in school and they want to be a doctor, like nobody goes, oh, well, I don't know what I want to be. I'm going to med school. Like, no, you know, it's just as hard to be a successful doctor as it is to be a successful artist. It just, in society's eyes, it's not harder. And that's where we are these days, is with whatever it is. Like, it's very difficult to be successful in the restaurant business if you listen to society. But here I am, I'm doing it from being somebody that had no food and went out of business at every single business I've ever had before Ike's, to creating a sandwich empire. And it's not because it's my idea is better than your idea. It's because I decided that I'm okay with not making money from what I love to do, knowing that I made a priority to do what I love to do over making money. And that's the number one tip I'll have for anybody. What is it that you love to do? Because if you're not going to make money anyway, or you're going to work for other people anyway, you might as well be doing what you love to do and not make money or not be fully financially secure. So just do that. Go all in on that. And as a byproduct of that, there you are and you're doing what you love to do. You're going to do it more, or do it more creatively, or have better ideas, or wake up and not be tired from doing it. You can do it 20 hours a day versus you're like, oh, thank God, oh, it's Monday. I got a case on the Monday. And thank God it's Friday, because it's something you don't care about doing. For some reason, when we're doing those things that we love to do, it's just easier for us to do. And because it's easier, you have better ideas. You do it longer. You do it better. And eventually, you're going to get rewarded for that, because people are going to be like, oh, I like going to that restaurant because that guy cares. Or I like watching this guy's perform his art or her art, because when they're doing it, they don't care whether it's one person watching or zero person watching or 100 people watching. They're in it. We all love just unconsciously being around people that are really into what it is that they're doing, regardless of what they're doing. There's so many examples in the world of where people are doing something that you're, quote, not supposed to be making money from. Like, there's so many famous actors and artists and restaurateurs and any kind of business, like app makers, nurses, doctors. There's so many people that are really into what they're doing, and they're successful because they really like to do that. And we enjoy when we're around there more versus when you even go to a restaurant and the person doesn't freaking care, whether it's the server or the owner. Or you go into a clothing store and the person is just there collecting a paycheck. You rather the person that actually wants to be there at the clothing store. We already know this, like just even not even unconsciously, we know it consciously. So what are those things that you are? And then do those. and don't be afraid of the lack of money. But Ike, I need to eat, or I have family to feed, or I get that. You're just as likely to feed your family opening up a restaurant as you are working your 9 to 5 or working for somebody else regardless. Is the extra pay in the short term worth it more to you than doing what you love? Because God rewards us when we're doing what we love. How do you know? How many people out there are doing what they love and then they become successful at it? Almost all of them. And the only ones that don't are because they quit beforehand.
That's so true. Do you have a specific book that you feel has inspired you along your entrepreneurial journey? Something that maybe I could order and then pick up?
I would say so. The number one book I have for somebody that is thinking that maybe they don't know how to turn what they love to do into a career, or even where they have like things that are important to them that maybe not be business. They might be like relationships or their physical body. It's a book by one of my mentors, Dr. John DeMartini. It's called The Values Factor. Now, once I became familiar with the values factor, how he describes it, it changed my whole life. It just had me reassess everything that's important to me and find ways to make those the priority in my life versus like trying to survive and that kind of mentality. So the values factor, and that's whether you want to be an entrepreneur or whether you want to have better relationships with your family. Like that is a book for all areas of life. That's the number one book from that. And it's not business specific though. It'll definitely show you how to turn what you love to do into a business. And if you do that book and do all the exercises in there, then I feel like your whole life will be changed. And it's an easy read too. And then, I have other books like more like deeper, like quantum theory books that I really highly recommend, or even just entrepreneurial books. If you're already in business right now, that would do like, and they're pretty basic books. They're The E-Myth, which was the first ever personal development book or business book I ever read. The E-Myth, there's that. And I forget the author, but it's a pretty famous book, The E-Myth. And then another book called Guerrilla Marketing. And I don't recall the authors at this time, but those are both like basic, rudimentary, you're in business right now and you want some tips right now. But the values factor would be, if you're only going to read one book, it would be that one.
Now you have expanded a lot over the past few years. I think you have like about 30 something franchises now. Is that correct?
You mean how many locations we have?
Yeah, how many locations do you have now?
Yeah, we got almost 100 now.
Oh, okay. Wow. So even more than I thought. Tell us a little bit about that process. You know, like how did you start the expansion? And I know you go to the grand openings of these different locations and stuff, but how do you kind of keep control of the, or do you keep like a hard, strict, control of the process and recipes and all that? And then, you know, because now you have over 100 locations, it's hard to kind of take care of everything, right? Or do you kind of let the individual franchisees kind of have a little bit control of the situation? What's your process for that?
I'll start by saying almost none of the Ikes are franchised. We have 5 that are franchised, and the other like 90 or whatever are corporate stores. So it is a myth, and it's a societal, like, people just think it's difficult. The hardest part of your whole business journey is deciding to do your business in the first place, to go from you have a safe job or whatever it is to moving forward and taking the risk. So the hardest part, if you're already in business, is already done. You decided to go into business. The second hardest part is opening your first location, whether it's a restaurant or a retail store, or if you're an artist, whatever it is. That's the second hardest part. The easiest part out of the whole thing is second location. Then the next easiest part is the third location. It is a myth. Somewhere along the line, people thought and said, oh, it's difficult to open up 100 restaurants. Well, I'm on the precipice of 100 restaurants, and I'll tell you, opening up restaurant number 100 is the easiest thing that I've done at Ike's.
Wow.
It was easier than the first one by far. Like the first, the hardest was me starting Ike's and me going, I'm going to quit all my jobs and open up Ike's. And I guarantee to get to 1,000 locations is going to be easier than the first 100. It is so where, because the thing is look, you've already opened up one of whatever you're doing. So you had one, you already knew, like if you were going to open up a second one tomorrow, you already know the mistakes you made doing the first one. So you're going to do the second one better. And the same thing with the third one. You're going to do the third one better because you learned mistakes from the first one and the second one. And now we're about to open up whatever the 100th one. And we've learned 99 mistakes that we've made, right? Or more. And then to get to 1,000, we'll probably have another 500 mistakes that we made. So it's a myth. You have one, you owe it to yourself to open up a second one. Like, what's the reason why you opened your business in the first place? Is it to share your passion or whatever? It doesn't matter what it is. Whatever the reason why you opened your first business, you're taking away from the world by not opening up a second one or a third one. Like, my goal is to feed people and love them through sandwiches. If I said, oh, well, it's too hard to do a second one, or even the other stuff that comes in now all of a sudden, oh, like you're a sellout because you have 100 locations. No, I want to love people and I want to feed people sandwiches. So I'm a sellout if I don't feed a billion people. I'm not a sellout if I stay at one location, local to San Francisco, kissing everybody and personally shaking their hands. No, I'm a sellout. And if you're in a business and you're holding yourself back, I'm going to tell you, you're a freaking sellout. Mm-hmm. Do you care about humanity? You care about society, you care about doing good things, then you should have 1,000 locations, 20,000 locations, 40,000 locations, feeding billions of people. McDonald's serves billions of people. They care more about feeding people than any other restaurant on the planet because they feed billions of people. They care more than I do. Why do I know that? Because they feed more people than me. Now you're like, but McDonald's sucks. Yeah, I don't care. They feed billions of people. That's my dream. My dream is to feed billions of people with better food than McDonald's, but I can't get there yet, and I haven't gotten there yet. So I'm a sellout if I don't open up 20,000 Ike's, not the other way around. And people need to get that the hell out of their mindset. Like, the more successful you are, the more you help society. Like Jeff Bezos and Amazon, we all use it, and you know, whatever, use it all the time. You use it multiple times a week. He touches billions of people. That's why he's a billionaire. That's why he's probably a trillionaire soon. So don't hate on those people. Hate on yourself because you're not touching that many people.
So are we going to see a Ike's in Jerusalem, Palestine anytime soon?
Hey, if somebody wants to go open one up out there, I know my mom's actually out there right now. I would totally do it. I would do that. I want one on Mars. I want one in Australia. I want one in New Orleans, like all over. If I'm not feeding people, if I'm not bringing love through sandwiches, then I'm like literally taking from the world.
That's so well said. That's really beautifully said. I'm wondering, I know you have a lot of secrets in your sandwiches. I'm wondering if there's something that you can share with people, either a cool sandwich combination that you've been working on, or maybe like a cool sauce that you sort of dreamed up recently, something that maybe we could make at home. And tag you if any of our listeners end up making at home.
Just make sure it has halal chicken inside.
Yeah. What I'll say is the number one tip I can give for like making great sandwiches at your own house is it starts with what about you, your personality, can you put into the sandwich? For me, it's all about making your own secret sauce. Whatever your secret sauce is. So if you want to make your own secret sauce, like just look in your fridge right now. What base do you have? Do you have olive oil, or do you have butter, or do you have mayonnaise, or do you have, you know, whatever it is, like some base of a sauce, and look at what your favorite spices are that you have and do like a teaspoon of each of those. Like say if you did 4 ounces of whatever base you want to use, whether it's butter, olive oil, mayonnaise, some other sauce that you have, ranch, in your fridge, and then a teaspoon of your favorite spices. Mix that up. It'll be your own secret sauce. And then put that on whatever ingredients you want, whether it's going to be a veggie sandwich or a chicken sandwich or and toast it. My secret is usually toast the sauce. Like, I don't care what sauce it is, it's going to be better toasted. But you're not supposed to cook mayonnaise, or ranch doesn't taste good toasted. I guarantee you that your toasted ranch secret sauce is going to be better than a non-toasted ranch secret sauce. That's just something that I've learned over time making sandwiches. So make your own version of a secret sauce at home, and that's basically the hack. It doesn't matter what you make after that. Put your secret sauce on there, and it'll become your own version of your sandwich.
I love that. The fact that it's like, yeah, put yourself into it. If you're not enjoying what you're cooking, you know, how are you going to expect other people to enjoy it? And one sauce I've lately been kind of fixated on is I got some gochujang, super spicy gochujang sauce that I mix with Japanese QP mayo. Oh my goodness. It is spicy. It is smooth. It is fantastic.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. So you do that. Yeah, do that. And then whatever other, like, if you like za'atar, throw some za'atar, like whatever it is that you want to throw in there. And then it'll be like your literal secret sauce. And you're like, because that would be dirty with some chicken. Mm-hmm. Like, imagine that, the QP gochujang and some za'atar and maybe even a little bit of drizzle of olive oil at the end on a chicken sandwich. Yeah. Like, that sounds, I would eat that right now.
A little pickled radish, maybe a little pickled kimchi, and then get a little Korean fried chicken sandwich.
There you go.
Well, there you go. There you go. So if you guys want to try that sandwich, just order the Abbas Muhammad out there at the eggs.
I was going to ask a question. The last question was, how can I get my own sandwich at Ike's? The Irfan Raidan sandwich. How can I do that?
So the number one question I probably get as far as sandwiches go is, Ike, how can I get a sandwich named after me? There's a couple ways to do it. I mean, likely there's like 1,000 ways to do it, but the easiest way to do it is create a sandwich that's so delicious that I have to put it on the menu. That's the easiest thing to do. Then there's other things you can do, like go change the world in some area of life that I feel so inspired by you that I need to reach out to you to make a sandwich. That's probably the hardest part is doing that. And then after that, it's like, what is it that you are passionate about? And then put that in a sandwich and then just be like, all right, Ike, here it is. And just throw it in my face, not literally throw it, but put it in my face and be like, eat this. And then I'll eat it. And like the Meatless Mike sandwich, one of our most famous sandwiches of all time. I didn't create that. The Ménage à Trois sandwich, in its current iteration, I did adjust it. But the idea for the Ménage à Trois sandwich, I didn't create that either. Someone else pitched that to me. And then they named it the Ménage à Trois, and it was great. And I adjusted it a little bit to make it more easily
made. That's interesting.
Easily
so that made. wasn't even you.
That wasn't even me. Okay, right now, like the Ménage à Trois sandwich that you get at Ike's right this second is my like adjustments on somebody else's creation. And that's the thing is like the two of my three most popular sandwiches, I didn't even create. So it's not even about that. Like, even the celebrity sandwiches we sell, we sell a lot of Hunter Pence sandwiches. That was his collaboration with me. So you could totally make your own sandwich. You just got to make it so that it has to be like a must eat sandwich. So I don't know, maybe that's harder than changing the world. So maybe you want to go change the world and then I'll name a sandwich after you.
That's funny. And the Ménage is one of my favorite sandwiches, and I bet you get this a lot, but my first Ménage à Trois was at yours. Season 3 will be dedicated to exploring the food industry, so stay tuned for future interviews with restaurateurs, entrepreneurs, and other notable people within the industry. Thank you so much for tuning into the Artistic Foodies. Before we go, show some love for your favorite podcast by leaving us a review on Apple Podcasts.
Be sure to find us on Facebook and Instagram to stay tuned for more episodes, as well as bonus content. You can have access to all of our episodes on our website, theartisticfoodies.com.
This podcast has been brought to you by Halal Fest Incorporated and Gamma, gathering all Muslim artists.